following is a remastered version of the Pulse Gamecast, a production of Holosuite Media. Tune in to our live show every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Good evening. Welcome to episode 3 of the Pulse Gamecast at holosuitemedia.com. I'm your host, Gradle.
And I'm Jason.
Today's record date is November 19th, 2013. It's 8 p.m. Eastern. So we'll go ahead and jump right into it as we do with every episode. Let's start off with, Jason, what you and I have been doing gaming-wise for the past week. What's been keeping us busy. What we've been up to. Want to go ahead and start us off?
Oh yeah, I've been super busy. A friend of mine made me get that Humble Bundle, and I've been neck deep in Batman Arkham Asylum. I spun up my old Xbox USB controller and attached it to my computer, and it's been gone through two sets of AA batteries. Been playing some SWTOR, obviously having some fun there. And stuck on Nar Shaddaa with, I think, three separate characters. I'm not going to talk about my Altitus. Yeah. And finally, tabletop-wise, I have been gearing up for a Dark Heresy campaign in the Warhammer 40K Inquisitor universe. So that's going to be some fun. We're actually going to put some of that stuff we've been talking about on a remote desktop gaming to use. So that's been it for me. How about you, sir?
Like you, I've been playing SWTOR. Working on a Juggernaut Sith Warrior. Let's see, I've also been playing Batman Arkham Asylum. Batman Arkham Origins. And for tabletop, which I actually did this week, my home campaign of D&D, we are running through the Shackled City campaign. That was the one that came out, it came out in Dragon, not Dungeon. But it was a monthly, like, 10 or 12 issue type thing. But anyways, that's what I've been up to.
Awesome. Didn't they compile that all into one thing?
Yeah, they did. They sure did. And that's what we're playing. The GM, Greg, bought the big hardback, big old huge thing, and that's what we're running through.
Sweet.
Just real quick, Arkham Asylum, what part are you on?
Honestly, I just got the gel gun, and I'm going back to try to clear some walls so I can find more of the Joker's little hidey hole areas. And I broke free. I'm at the top of the... I just broke out into the surface, so I guess I'm at 7% now.
Yeah, you just had to go defend the Batmobile from attackers and get the gel gun.
Exactly. That's just where I'm at.
Yep, that's a great game. Okay, so we've got a little bit of news this week. Of course, the elephant in the room, as it were, the PS4 dropped. Sold 1 million units in the first 24 hours in North America. Of course, the because it hasn't elephant. Released. Do what?
I said the blue elephant.
Yeah, no, did I say blue elephant? I thought I said the elephant.
No, that was me.
Oh. Crazy. But yeah, so it sold 1 million units in North America. It hasn't dropped anywhere else yet. Late November for, as they call it, the rest of the world, and February for Japan. So I guess it's up and running, but of course there are some issues.
Is it?
Jason, why don't you tell us about the battle blog?
Oh my goodness, the BBLOD, the blinking blue light of death. Yes, so everyone who remembers, I don't know, I don't want to say that I'm old, but I think we established our street cred a few episodes ago. For those who don't remember that we've been around for a little while, we remember the Red Ring of Death. And now is the chance for all of the Xbox users who got poked at by the PlayStation users to poke back. Apparently, according to Sony, 0.4% of all shipped, that is 1 million to North America PS4s, are affected in one way or another, as in bricked out of the box. Now, this isn't a single problem that's been happening. It's multiple collections of problems. Some can be fixed with patch updates, by getting online and downloading a newer pack, but some of them you can just turn it on and you get a blinking blue light. Some get amber lights and some get no lights at all. Now I'm quite sure that Sony's usually better at QA than this, but this is a real spit in the face of people who wanted to pay, $3.99?
Yeah.
Plus tax, so $4.29 and been waiting. Now the bad part here is that Sony was not prepared for this, although we had just last episode talked about how they were spending lots of money in infrastructure. Even if it was only a quarter of the people who needed to do the update to get it to run, I'm under the impression from the numbers that I've heard that they crashed the initial servers trying to download all these patches at once. Then once everything came back online, some of the people were obviously working up and running fine. Many of the people, especially some of the people running blogs, are not experiencing these problems. But from what the net's telling me, it's times the order. From what I'm seeing, 4% approximately of all of those sold is what the net is telling us. So big round circle. Let me get back to it and I'll hand it back to you here. Red Ring of Death, when that happened, social media wasn't what it is today. So effectively, we have no real hard numbers on how many people were affected by that, but we do know that it went on for years, up to 3 years after the initial release of the Xbox, thermal detonation of the interior core, basically. But this blue ring of death, blue blinking light of death, is Sunny Sand 0.4%. Most people are saying 4%. Either way, we've got up to 5% of the Sonys coming out of the box that are just basically $399 paperweights and a help desk that is not supporting it at the moment. So apparently it's better if you do have one of these affected and you are listening to our podcast. Three of the blogs that I've read and two of the news sites say it's best to go ahead and call and get a voice person and not try to do the online. Online takes too long, and basically they're going to do the same thing. Ship you a box. There's been anywhere from 1 week to up to February for a replacement unit, if a replacement unit is required. So I'm sorry, everybody. I hope everything goes well for you. But if not, you have our condolences, and we'll keep you up to date on any new breaks that are happening.
So they've said with the PS4, there's a patch required to get it to work right out of the box. And that's not what this is. Is it a power supply issue? Or?
Yeah, some people are saying power supply. Some people are saying video. Other people are saying that it is a quality control and it's been jostled, that it could be a hard drive has become detached while it was in motion, because that'll also give you the amber light. But some people are just flat out saying there's no lights at all. So that's just flat out QA.
I wonder, I mean, you know, they've pushed production on this line, you know, much more than the PS3. I wonder if that's exactly what it is, just a Q&A or a QA issue where they just pushed it too much, tried to fill demand.
Well, if I'm not wrong, the motherboards are created by a company called Foxconn. And there is a Foxconn rumor going around on the internet, and some people are saying that it's a lie, and other people saying that it's true. But there's an internal memo that came out from one of the Foxconn people saying that this thing was not ready for shipping because of Q&A. So that being said, I don't want to spread rumors that I can't verify. I have seen it, but the origin hasn't been WikiLeaked or anything, so I don't know.
I guess if you have a PS4 and you're up and running smoothly, you're better off than 0.04% of everybody else. Now, I had something in our show notes. Jason reminded me that we mentioned this on episode 2, but just a reminder, Amazon is selling PS3, PS4, and Vita games digitally. And of course, they sell the hard copy, but digitally for download. Be sure to check that out. And it is Amazon, and I guess if you're a member, you know, they like to hand out those $5 credits when you buy their games. So, there we go. Let's see, another quick little tidbit of news that I was extremely bummed about. Ubisoft's South Park: The Stick of Truth has been delayed. It was supposed to come out next month, December, and has been delayed until March of 2014. Apparently the game was, coming along. Everything was, was okay until Ubisoft got hold of it, and they said, oh no, problems. So they've delayed the release. They want to go back and redo some of the code. And I guess there was an issue because Trey Parker and Matt Stone, the creators of South Park, have okayed this, and they are 100% behind the delay. So no Fair Lady Princess Kenny until March of 2014.
Respect the authority.
Let's see. Friday, November 22nd. Let me go ahead and get the little dinky bit of news for Friday out of the way. Legend of Zelda, A Link Between Worlds, which I'm excited for and can't wait for, drops $40. And episode 1, I believe I mentioned that they were showing gold Triforce emblazoned 3DS XLs in Britain. They weren't 100% sure if those were going to be available in America, and they are. You can actually find pictures on the interwebs. Apparently, a Walmart in Georgia, I believe, has stocked their shelves. They won't sell them yet, but you can find pictures an employee took of the Zelda-themed 3DS XLs in the cabinet, ready to go for Friday. Now, the big news on Friday, Jason, here you go, man. It's all yours.
Yeah, Friday's got some... Now, listen, I'm not a fanboy here, so... Let me go ahead and get that out of the way. But the truth is the Xbox One drops November 22nd. And that's somewhat big news to some of those Microsoft people. But hey, I guess if you're willing to pay the extra $100 so that you don't get a really pretty brick out of the box.
Well, you know, okay, 0.04% of PS4s are having issues. Let's go back and look at how many Xbox 360s had issues.
1 out of 5.
1 out of 5. And I wouldn't be surprised if Xbox One... I wouldn't be surprised.
Not yet. I'm not going to argue with you on that one. That's I had to get this out of the way so that anyone listening doesn't think I'm a fanboy. I've been a Sony person a lot of my life. Just name brandish. You know, like some people are Chevy and Ford. But up until the PS4 blue ring of blue light of death here, I've never ever said, wow, they've stooped to so-and-so's level. But apparently with this Q&A issue that they're having, I should not be surprised. Now, like I said, I want this to die down, but the truth is there's some really good stuff coming up with the Xbox, and I don't want to diss anybody listening because they've really put some incredible tech into this, almost over-teched. And I'm not going to go back over everything everybody said, but if anyone's familiar with a couple of these large titles that are coming out, Xbox only, you're going to be stoked. Did you ever play any Forza?
No, I didn't. I'm not a racing game kind of guy.
Well, Forza was one of the first games that included damage in its play model. A damaged car would react like a damaged car while you were driving. It wasn't one of those things where you stick a supercharger and then kind of ride the rail around the track. But Forza 5, you're going to get a pre-order. If you pre-order, you're going to get this some fairly interesting technology. They've got this thing called Drivatar technology, where it's an ever-evolving network of opponents who are always ready to race. And what that means is they have AI opponents online. You're not just facing off against people. You're facing off against AIs that act like people, make the same moves, the same turns, and the same mistakes. That's impressive because I hate facing off against the computer and getting my butt handed to me every day of the week. So it's going to be nice for it to screw up in real life, you know, riding too close, hitting bumpers, rolling the rail, powering into a turn. But what's important to me, the human mistake part, is that... there's very few games that pull that off well, and they've been doing it for 3 iterations now. So if you don't feel like playing the 24-hour Monza, you can train that thing to drive like you, and then let it go and have a Drivatar drive for you. And he'll pretty much perform like you would have performed in the race, so you'll get a legitimate outcome. So that's interesting.
So there's an actual race that's real-time, 24 hours?
It's compressed, but yeah, it can take you 3 to 5 hours to run a 24-hour race. Ugh. So if you feel like doing that, yeah, you go right ahead. Iron Man.
That's right.
But truthfully speaking, the cars, they're actually licensed cars, which is important nowadays, licensed by the studios and to perform like their supposed counterparts. The pre-order, I believe, has a Lamborghini, a Ford, and don't quote me, but I think the other one is an Audi, but very, very good cars, and they drop you into the race with some fairly decent stats. That being said, other single game that, and this one to me is really kind of cool, is Risa, I guess is how you pronounce it. Is that correct?
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm assuming.
It's basically a gladiatorial. It's in the Roman era, and obviously there's a lot of Maximuses and Commodituses, and you just put a U.S. on the end of your name and you're good.
Right.
But it's using the new CryEngine, and that's what's impressive to me. The new CryEngine, I've heard tons and tons about. I've only seen two games that have used it, but this game is the one that looks like it's really going to blow people away. And the reason is from what I'm hearing, the multiplayer gladiator rings are supposed to be all that and a bag of chips. Digital chips involved, but chips nonetheless. Hmm. They're utilizing their smart glass technology with this game, which is an Xbox-only thing that I haven't seen with anyone else yet. You know what a Surface is, right?
Like the tablet?
Just like the tablet. Also the Windows phone, right?
Okay.
And now let's add on your standard Windows 8 computer. All those are what they consider smart glass capable. You can hook those to your Xbox One, and while you're playing the game and or watching a movie, they deliver extra content real time to that device. Now, that's kind of cool, don't you think?
It is. So, it will deliver real-time game information whether or not you're logged into the game?
Absolutely. Online and offline. That's where it's really cool. Like, let's say you're online. You get stuck in this area. I mean, we've all been to one of those ones where the game designer's like, obviously overestimated your intelligence quotient. And you're standing here going, what do I do next? If you have smart glass technology, they've got built-in tips on that thing for that level. So that's wicked cool. You can also manage your army while, because this is a multiplayer ranged combat and single player all at the same time, you manage your troops real time. So you can manage your troops using the smart glass technology on your Windows phone and or your Windows 8 touchscreen computer or your touch tablet, you know, Surface.
While you're watching a movie, you could direct troops. Like, you might get an alert maybe, oh, so-and-so is attacking your line. Oh, well, let's shift troops over here to deal with that. Something like that?
Absolutely. And what's even cooler, and I'm just going to toss this as an aside, if you have the Kinect system, you can actually, in this particular game, yell at your troops to go defend the broken line up on the left, and the Kinect voice command system will enact itself and activate your troops.
Right.
Now that's fairly wicked. I'm sorry, but when I saw that, I was like, what? You can voice command your troops. You can manage your online content, you know, your leveling up of your character, what he's geared up with, his stuff like that, offline on your stuff or online while you're playing without taking away from playing the game while you got your hands on the controller. That's pretty cool, actually.
They did something. I've never owned an Xbox, but on the 360 with the Kinect, I know there were certain games that would utilize the voice commands. There's a lot of stories about Mass Effect 3, and I guess maybe even 2, but a lot of people would control their party members the same way, you know, just whatever, Miranda, you know, fire or whatever. So I guess that's something at least that works, because I've heard a lot of horror stories about the Kinect, but I guess hopefully they've got this one hammered out, got the details working. I guess we'll see.
Definitely.
It does look cool for just from the TV commercials I've seen.
There you go. And so that's pretty much my write-up on this right now as far as things that other people, I haven't seen them really kind of go in depth on. And I just, like I said, I'm not a fanboy, but I'm really stoked to see a couple of my friends were talking about buying this thing when it drops. I may have to stop by their house and break in while they're asleep. And but
try it out.
So what's up with you on the other front you got going on there?
So one thing, and there again, it's kind of my bad on this. I lost track of it. I enjoy SimCity. And the new one, of course, and I know there's a couple other staff members here at Holosuite Media who also enjoy it. We have, and there again, I haven't played in a while, but we have a little region that we run as Holosuite, and there's a new relatively new expansion that came out October 17th for this. Now, it's $30. It is a full-blown expansion. It's digital, but it's called the Cities of Tomorrow. And this gives you new buildings. It's a very futuristic look to the buildings, of course. The screenshots they have, a picture from Star Trek Into Darkness, the way San Francisco looks, futuristic yet still kind of city-ish, so you can go that route. There were also skins and buildings that would allow you to look like something cyberpunkish. Picture Shadowrun or Blade Runner. So just a neat little thing with that if you enjoy SimCity. And of course, any game of SimCity, you always have to deal with the natural disasters. Tornadoes, hurricanes, earthquakes, whatever. But this being the City of Tomorrow, what is the disaster? It's a big rampaging robot. So there you go. I believe in our game we have the disasters turned off because they're so brutal. I remember playing City of SimCity on like the SNES, and yeah, the disasters, tornado would blow through and wreck a few buildings, but man, in the new SimCity, these disasters just level so much of your city. It's just not even funny.
It's like a kaiju walk through downtown.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's going to be like, and I can just imagine what that thing's going to do. Now, I think in the base game, I think monsters might still be available. I don't remember. But I remember, you know, one of the older ones, monsters were available, and a big Godzilla thing would come through and just stomp your buildings flat that you spent a week of gameplay building up. It was great.
It's wrong.
Let's move on to our next little bit of SWTOR news. They have, now Jason put in the show notes about a blog that the devs have done about some of the upcoming, I guess mainly one of the ships, is that right? It mainly focuses on the scout ship?
It focuses on the scout ship, but it kind of breaks it down into its different types. Mm-hmm. And they talk about the different, even though scout is a class, each ship handles that class differently. So, I highly suggest that you go take a look at it, but because they specifically name off some of the fighters that are going to be involved, but they have a, it's sort of like the difference between in any gaming thing where you have like a tank, you have like a tech tank or a healing tank or a different type of tank. They accomplish it, but they accomplish it through different routes. Same thing as with these fighters is what I'm seeing. The scout is going to be a maneuverable class, a very forward in the thick of it class, but constantly on the move, and a very specific edge of the tip of the sword, I guess is the word you're looking for.
Right.
And it looks like each different scout ship is going to handle that differently, but in the end, they're all just light fighters. So
yeah,
definitely read the blog.
Yeah, it's funny that you put this in the notes. I was listening to a podcast today, a SWTOR podcast, and these guys actually got some hands-on time with the devs in Galactic Starfighter. And the way they kind of explained it are the scout ships, of course, are that. They're small, they're agile, they're quick, they're fast. I imagine they probably don't have really super strong shields and armor, but what these are for, you spawn, you kick in the afterburners, the boosters, whatever, and you go claim your points. Because most of the missions, they said, are kind of like control points, hold for a certain amount of time. The scout ships, they said, of course, you have your forward-firing lasers, and you have, I believe they said, concussion missiles on the scout ships. So if you've ever done any of the space missions in SWTOR, you know, on the rail stuff, of course, you fire your lasers, and you hold down your right mouse button, and it gives you a target lock for your missiles. Well, the scout ships do not have that. The missiles will just fire forward and hit whatever's in the way, and if the ship you're firing at gets out of the way, well, you just wasted missiles. Now, they said the strike fighter, I think that's what they're calling it, essentially the one that kind of looks like the Z-95, the Headhunter, almost the precursor to the X-Wing, that one will have proton torpedo-esque missiles similar to the space mission. So you will actually get a target lock on your missiles with that. And then, like I said in one of our episodes, I'm looking forward to the gunship. The gunship is a sniper. They will fly to a certain point. They'll stop. And that's what they do. They have extremely long-range weapons. So I can't wait. One other thing. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying. And you can't forget that some of the things that we're going to include are going to be deep strike missions. And one of the things that the Scout class is good for is going to be their top-of-the-line sensor systems. And they actually mount sensor systems to these, and they also give them locator beacons. And what you can do is fly deep in. Because you're so maneuverable, you can maneuver past, if you can get past the first screen, which is usually what happens in a large battle, if you can get past the first screen and get past the medium fighters, which can't keep up with you, and if they do have the lock-on packages, they'll miss. I've been reading about this, by the way. They have the ability to locate enemies and their communicate their location to the allies. So if you're looking for a specific multiplayer gunship like what you're talking about, these scout fighters are equipped with sensor beacons, which is, I don't know if you ever played Battletech, what a lot of your scouts are for. You equip them with sensor beacons, you send them forward. They know that it's generally a one-way trip, but they get there, they launch the sensor beacon, and then everyone locks onto that and delivers. So, yeah, not heavily armed, yeah, very maneuverable, but they still have some very, very useful utilitarian spots. And although they're generally what you start off with, just because you're able to move up to the higher level doesn't mean a lot of people get away from that kind of thing. I remember flying my A-Wing forever. So just to throw that out there, there's a couple of different ship types that do that. The S-12 Black Bolt is one of them, the Imperial one, and then the Nova Dive are ship to ship. But then they also talk about the S-13 Sting, I believe. No, wait, excuse me. The Flashfire and the S-13 are ship to ship. The S-12 Blackout and the Nova Dive are the sensor package ones. So
there you go. So yeah, that's kind of how they explained it, is, you know, these guys are there to rush out, grab the control points, but also, you know, they're your sniper hunters. That's what they do.
Yep.
Yeah, that's I can't wait for that. That's going to be great.
We're going to have fun with this.
Oh yeah. Well, I guess that's going to pretty much wrap it up for our console and PC news, unless you have anything else, Jason.
I did want to mention something that I missed earlier because we were hammering pretty hard on PS4. There was a little breaking news, and I want to call this news. It's not news, but it is. If anybody knows anything about Sony, they know who Smedley is. And Smedley smiled while he was talking to GameSpot the other day and said, "We haven't announced technically that we're putting EverQuest next on the PS4, but it's fair to say that we're a Sony company, so, you know, I say that with a smile on my face."
Well, you know, and I think that actually has always been the goal, is to have it PC and console. And
well, we know that, yeah, DC Universe is definitely on it, and they've already all but announced that PlanetSide 2 is going to be on it, so EverQuest next, Landmark Alpha, is supposed to do what we talked about last time. The world building tool begins in February, you know, and from what we're hearing, those founder packs and everything is supposed to be available for the PS4. So that's interesting.
My plan is to eventually get a PS4. I do not like MMOs on a console. I don't. I never have. For me, it kind of loses the feel of the game. And especially, you know, if they have it on the PS4, is it going to be a combined server, or will it be only PS4 players, or will it, you know, PC and PS4? Because I've played something similar, and it's so annoying when you're trying to talk to someone, okay, well, let's go over here and do this, and they don't reply, ever. And then you realize, of course, they're on a PlayStation, they can't type, they can't chat. So, do you know if there's a plan to integrate the servers, or will it be all PlayStation servers and all PC servers?
They have not announced that yet.
Okay. Well, who knows? I mean, you know, with the advent of Bluetooth and whatnot on these consoles, if you're a PlayStation 4 owner and you're planning on playing an MMO, get a chat device. At the very least, get a headset or something. Come on now, guys. So that'll wrap up this part. Let's move on to general geeky stuff. Jason has a really cool Kickstarter that he found. Why don't you fill us in?
As all of you know, I drink the Kickstarter Kool-Aid deeply and with love. But every once in a while, like I said, you run across one, and I can only say that so many times before y'all start saying, "What are you doing other than just trolling Kickstart?" I actually play some games, believe it or not. But this one was a good one. For those of you who know that we like playing the standard tabletop, Cthulhu is a dear and very near to my heart game. Love H.P. Lovecraft and that whole mythos. Anyone who knows our sister podcast, Beyond the Veil, plug, stop by if you haven't been there. That game is an MMORPG for the ages because it includes modern horror and Cthulhu. So, but let me just go ahead and say this. Cthulhu Britannica London, Call of Cthulhu RPG box set. Basically, what we're looking at here is a guide for London, a keeper's book, and a scenario book for a Gaslight Horror London. And this is some really, really, really deep stuff we're talking about here, because Cthulhu is its own mythos. But to have an entire box set, not only the RPG game, you know, but the boxed, we're going to have London, and they've gone the full route. They've said, okay, look, this is the way people used to get from this place to this place, by horse and carriage, but from here to here they used a boat, and from here they were only allowed to walk. So that's how deep the maps go in. But it also lists places by neighborhood, income levels, people who live there, historical sites, and that's just the guide to London. When you get into the Keeper's Book, then you start hearing about the Cthulhu mythos and the cults that were there. And this draws on actual historical base, not just blending the Cthulhu, but historical based instances and inferences that happened for that time period. And then you've got a scenario book. And because they've made their goal, but now they're into the stretch goals, they've already got three scenarios out for this thing. Now, here's what's important, and the people are like, well, that's nice, Jason, but there's a lot of source material out there. How much of the source material has named Sandy Peterson attached to it? And that's, yes, the person who designed Call of Cthulhu. Mike Mason, co-author of 7th edition Call of Cthulhu. And I know you're not real big on RPGs on console, but anybody who knows anything about Dragon Age knows Chris Promise. I mean, he also co-authored, I believe, Warhammer Fantasy 2nd edition. Role-playing game. And then my personal favorite, Graham Davis. Okay, Graham Davis is just a legend on in the UK side for just he's a font of originality when it comes to writing things. Now you're like, okay, well, those are some pretty big names to all already be involved in this. They're only 2,500 British pounds away from getting Gav Thorpe on this. And Gav Thorpe, I mean, come on, Mike. Great, tell them about Gav.
Well, in all honesty, I don't know much that Gav has written outside of Warhammer. That's primarily where I know him from, Warhammer 40K novels and source books and whatnot. He is one of my favorite 40Ks. I do like, oh, good grief, Sandy Mitchell. But I'd say Gav is probably my top two favorite Warhammer authors. Now, like I said, that's all I've read of his, of the Warhammer stuff, but he has a ton of it, and it's all great. Oh, he also did, here's another loop around, good segue. He also did the Arkham Horror novels. He did two of those based off of Fantasy Flight's Arkham Horror game. He wrote one or two of those novels.
And there you go. So that's what we're talking about here. And so basically what I was really getting at, and this is you hammered it home, these are the godfathers. I mean, if you had to say, let's make a mafia out of the Cthulhu, you know, mythos, that's Don Corleone and his entire crew right there. Okay. You cannot go wrong putting money into this, and their current levels are completely acceptable. They've got them matched for British pounds or US dollars. It's still open. You can still contribute and still receive a hard copy plus computer copies plus everything that rolls out into the future. And we're talking about maps, handouts, already pre-made, already on a heavy card stock for the vellum style look for that age and era. It's really beautiful stuff, and it's really well done. Really can't say enough about this. I'm glad they did it. And I believe you've got something too, don't you?
Well, I actually have a question about this real quick. What rules set are they using? Just like the old Chaosium?
Yeah, it looked as if that they were using the old Chaosium Call of Cthulhu set. It's really mostly source material, for the first two books, the third book being the scenario book, and they've promised a fourth scenario, and that's why I was so stoked about it being Gav Thorpe, because he's supposed to be involved in the fourth scenario along with Chris Promise. So if they're writing those stories, I mean, that's two things these people know a lot about, is storyline. So but yeah, if as far as I'm under the impression of, it's under the original Chaosium rules. And that's fine with me, because it's so widely known and so widely accepted in most of those virtual tabletop games that we've been discussing previously.
Now, I played... didn't someone take over Call of Cthulhu after Chaosium, or has it always been Chaosium?
There, because of copyright, you can use Cthulhu now in multiple... Yeah. In multiple genres, obviously, you know, we're not even going to go into what was the generic GURPS, Steve right. Jackson, I believe.
Right.
They hammered that one home, and then everybody's pretty much gone in. But yeah, it's still Chaosium's ball there, their football.
Yeah, I'm just wondering. I played in a Call of Cthulhu game years ago, and it was Percentile, which I assumed was the old Chaosium stuff.
Yes.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, that'll be neat. I've never played... Now, when I played, it was the 1920s.
Yes.
But since this is Britannica, is this going to be more of the 1890s?
From what I'm looking at, the 1920s is the standard setting for the American version.
Yeah.
That we're really... This is supposed to be 1920s London. However, when I was looking, the tubes and... The things that they're talking about weren't widely used yet in America. Yes, some in London, some in Europe, but not as widely used. So you still had a lot of internal horse and carriage. You did have cars. I mean, you know, I'm not going to tell you that they didn't. Right. Let's see, Mercedes invented it. But truthfully speaking, most of downtown London, just like any place, was still horse and cart. And this, I hate to say this because I don't like to mix my genres, but your steampunk players would probably enjoy this.
My little addition to general geeky stuff is I'm kind of a a weird fan as far as Shadowrun goes. I love Shadowrun. I've read every novel. I own a lot of 4th edition. I own the 5th edition core book that just came out. I have never ever played a game of Shadowrun before. But I love the lore, and so I keep an eye on Catalyst to see what they're putting out, and it's been in the works for a while, but since we're a new show, and we're fairly new, it's new to us, so they're putting out, Shadowrun is putting out a game called Crossfire, and this is a deck-building game, which I gather is buying a set of cards and creating your deck as opposed to buying booster packs and all that. I'm assuming it's just like the Star Wars Fantasy Flight puts out. You buy the set decks, you make your decks off those cards. There's no random booster packs, I guess. But Shadowrun Crossfire will be a 2-4 player co-op game, which, you know, and that's a bonus right off the bat with me. You are a Shadowrunner team. You, of course, receive your mission from Mr. Johnson. And as inevitably happens, it was a setup. The Johnson sets you up for failure. There's a double cross. You have to fight your way out. And, of course, who was pulling the Johnson strings but a dragon?
Yeah,
I mean, they just combine everything about Shadowrun in one lump thing. Who cares? Oh, no, it's not Ares or Fujitsu that's pulling. It's a dragon.
But, it's your butt now, Chimbata.
Yeah, that's right. But that's the whole point of the game. You 2-4 people, you will have to deal with the double cross. You'll have to deal with the situation of that, fight your way out, and then fight your way back to and hopefully defeat the dragon. From what I've seen, I believe you will be able to play as a decker, as a mage, I believe a street samurai, street sam, and an adept, I think. I could see them maybe getting rid of the adept and going for a shaman so you can get some healing in there.
Yeah, I was just about to ask about that.
Yeah, I mean, those are such iconic standard classes. Who knows? Maybe they'll even have all the classes, the main archetypes and...
corpse and stuff.
Right. But there is no release date yet. As a matter of fact, this month, October, they were supposed to have released a demo box to various game stores so they can start running demos. That has not made it out yet. So I guess with the push for the 5th edition book to come out, they've kind of put some of the other things on the back burner. But if you're a Shadowrun fan, you enjoy card games, keep an eye on this. It's called Shadowrun Crossfire.
Do you think that they have any plans on doing digital editions of this, or is it supposed to be physical cards only?
Yeah, as far as I know, it's physical cards. It's a get you back to the brick and mortar places.
Nice, good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I enjoy the digital stuff. You and I have talked about it. I'm actually in the, not that it's a big deal, but I am in the Hearthstone, the World of Warcraft card game beta, which there is no plans to go physical. And you can actually hear more about that on A Worthy Opponent, one of our sister podcasts here at Holosuite Media.
Plug.
shill. But as far as I know, there is no design to go digital with Shadowrun Crossfire, which, you know, is kind of an ironic thing when you look at the fact that it is Shadowrun. You
know, but Tops is sponsoring it, and I'm good with that because, I mean, I hate to say this, truthfully speaking, and I know this makes me sound like a snob, but I've played so many games where the card quality was crap. You know, the misspellings, the card stock itself, the inking of the cards, you know, the card design and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. With Tops on top of this, and not as a joke, you know, no pun intended there. With Tops on it, I expect a better quality and better quality control. So I wouldn't mind getting into that.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to it. I hope it comes out fairly soon. That will just about wrap our show up real quick. Jason, do you have anything else?
No, I think that about did it. We covered quite a lot of really interesting stuff tonight.
We did. We got it done fairly quickly. One thing I did forget to to announce, I also played this week the BioShock Infinite DLC. Now, last episode, I had my little spiel on that about how it was going to be, it's $15. It wasn't supposed to be a whole lot of gameplay. Well, as I said then, I was planning on buying it. I did. I played it. It was really fun. I enjoyed it. And I played, as I said I did, in BioShock. I stopped and looked out the windows, checked out the scenery, interacted with all the people standing around, listened to the conversations. And it's not all that. It's not all just walk from group of people to group of people. There's a lot to do, and there's actually a lot to explore. And I see what Ken Levine meant when he said, if you just blow through the storyline, because, and I'm not going to spoil it for you, but where you end up, there's a lot of rooms you can go to that aren't along the path if you use the little guide. And if you've played BioShock, you know what I'm talking about. You hit the little up on the D-pad and it points you to the next area. Well, if you only follow that, you will miss out on a lot of stuff. So if you make sure to go into every room, every level, you will definitely, in my opinion, get your $15 worth. I highly recommend it. And it is BioShock Infinite, set in the City of Rapture. And so you know that there's going to be some big twist coming up, because it is Ken Levine. So that's just my little plug for it. Be sure to pick it up. You're really missing out if you don't. Well, with that being said, I guess we'll wrap up the show. Thanks for downloading us, if you download us. If you're listening live, thanks for hanging out with us. Jason, anything you want to plug before we head out?
Actually, I really would like it if people would visit Holosuite Media, drop by and take a look at our show, stop by and see our show notes, and maybe some of our sister broadcasts. Want to go ahead and fill them in on those?
Yeah, absolutely. So as Jason mentioned, we have at holosuitemedia.com, there is Beyond the Veil, a podcast about the secret world, tying back into that whole Cthulhu thing. We have the Tribbles in Ecstasy. That is obviously a Star Trek Online podcast. A Worthy Opponent, which is the World of Warcraft Hearthstone. There's us, of course, the Pulse Gamecast. And there is the Geek Easy, which is just kind of a general geeky, all things geek culture podcast. Be sure to check those out at holosuitemedia.com.
And remember that we've got guilds for each one of them. So, like, if you're playing any of those games and you don't have anyone to play with, or you're worried that you don't know how to complete a level or don't have any friends to go PvP with, we are always there for you. And there's always somebody online. In Tribbles and Ecstasy, we've got the side Tribbles, I believe, now. And we've got both Fed and Klingon sides.
Right.
On the Beyond the Veil, we have the London, Seoul, and London, Seoul, and New York chapters for each one of the factions. Check us out there. It's Beyond the Veil. And then I believe on the do we have something going with Hearthstone? Do they have
a
group?
No, it's in beta. It's still in beta.
Yeah, well, obviously, I guess it has to be a group because you got to be in the beta. I know I wasn't.
Did you sign up for it?
No, because I was too stoked about the expansion that you got me all pumped about. One more thing that's going out a month in subscriptions. What are you trying to do to me, man?
Right, I know.
All right, well, that's it for me, sir.
Alrighty, thanks for joining us. Be sure to check out HollowSweetMedia.com for the show notes, and have a good evening.
Y'all take care.
Thanks for tuning in to tonight's broadcast of the Pulse Gamecast, a production of HollowSweet Media. Join us next week at Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And be sure to check HollowSweetMedia.com, iTunes, and Stitcher Satellite Radio for our remastered shows and more. You can follow us on Twitter at The Pulse Gamecast. Or if you have any questions or comments, please send an email to ThePulseGamecast@gmail.com.